Okay, it is now 6 o'clock, so we'll call our meeting to order and welcome everyone virtually this evening. I hope everyone's been staying warm and safe, and I know that snow is heavy out there, but does look like it's trying to stop, so hopefully. The first item we have for business this evening is the swearing in of our councillor for District 4, Angie Shand. And on January 27th, 2026, Angie Shand was acclaimed in a special election as councillor for District 4 and is being sworn in this evening. So I will ask Ms. Shand if she will raise her right hand and make the oath of office, please.
Can you see me? I, Angela Shand, swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty, King Charles III, his heirs and successors according to law, and that I am duly qualified as required by law for the office of Councillor of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne, and that I will truly, faithfully, and impartially execute the duties of the office to which I have been elected to the best of my knowledge and ability, and that I have not received and will not receive any payment or reward or promise thereof for the exercise of any partially or other undue execution of the duties of my office.
Thank you. So I can now confirm that Councillor Angie or Angela Shand has been sworn in virtually on February 11th, 2026, as Councillor for District Number 4 for the Municipality of the District of Shelburne. Welcome, Councillor Shand.
Thank you. And I'm supposed to show that I just signed the document, but you can't really see it no matter how I turn it. But I was supposed to show it, but I don't know if you can really see it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for that. We'll move on to the next item, which is the approval of the agenda for February 11th, 2026. If we can have a motion, please.
I so move.
Thank you.
I'll
Seconder?
second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed,
Aye.
no. Motion is carried. Thank you. Next item is the acceptance of the minutes of January 28th, 2026. Are there any changes required to these minutes? Hearing none, we will accept the minutes as presented. Next item is business arising from the minutes. Anything to come before council this evening? Hearing none, we'll move on to presentation. And we'll welcome Zelka and Linda. Zelka is the president, and Linda is the fundraising committee chair for the Sandy Point Lighthouse. And they're here with us this evening to give us an update on their project. So welcome, ladies. I think you know everyone. I was going to say around the table, but all of the councillors.
Yeah,
Yeah, we're aware. Yeah.
Yes.
Hi.
Welcome. Welcome. And the floor is yours.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, since you introduced us, that makes our speech a little shorter. So I'm Zelka, and this is Linda, and we wanted to thank you for letting us make this presentation on behalf of a very important structure that stands in our harbor, the Sandy Point Lighthouse. We are here today to give an update and request for funding from the municipality to ensure that the lighthouse remains standing. We had several contractors come and look at the lighthouse last fall, but unfortunately, none of them gave us a quote. The membership then decided to get an engineering company to come in and assess exactly what work needed to be done to save the lighthouse and also give us a lead on contractors. We did send in a copy of the engineering report, so I'm hoping if you haven't read it, that you get a chance to read it, because in the engineering report, the base of the structure holds priority for us. It needs the most attention and as soon as possible. It's in the poorest condition. Phase two and three can be completed over the next few years. A few weeks ago, we were able to get a contractor who examined the base and provided us of a quote of $103,000, pending no surprises. This quote excludes concrete work that's needed at the base and at the railing. With that in mind, we're looking at $150,000 solely on repairing the base. So having said that, we are here today requesting support with the funding for the Lighthouse project. As of now, this group has $50,000 to contribute to the project being shy of $100,000. We are a small but growing group, and we carry the weight of maintaining the community center as well. We are looking for financial assistance from the municipality for the preservation of the Sandy Point Lighthouse. The Sandy Point Recreation Group has increased its fundraising efforts, not only by holding breakfasts 2 times per month, but also trying to engage the community more actively. Last year has been sort of a learning curve for me. And overall, I think we've managed to engage the community more. The group held a kite festival, Halloween party, Christmas party, calendars were sold that showing photos of the lighthouse, and they were taken by Shelburne County residents. The group participated in the Miracle on Dock Street. We had a New Year's Eve dance, which was very successful. The group now is planning a murder mystery party with a sponsorship from a local business. And there are other big events that we are planning. The hall can be rented out and catering can be provided. The group continues to seek other financial assistance through grants and is trying to increase membership and the volunteer base. And we have been a little bit of luck lately. We've had a few new members and a few more different faces when we're asking for volunteers. As we pointed out in our last presentation, one of the key features for tourism in the municipality is the Sandy Point Lighthouse because of its uniqueness. We stand firm that the Lighthouse and Community Center are an integral part of the tourism plan. The municipality also uses the center for various functions, such as senior socials and children's activities. The Sandy Point Lighthouse promotes the motto, live here, work here, play here. The iconic image of the lighthouse is everywhere. It is used in the promotion of tourism and by local businesses. The image of the lighthouse is used on the coat of arms for the municipality. The Chamber of Commerce uses the lighthouse on their logo. And by doing this, the municipality is showing respect for this iconic structure. And hopefully you as council feel a sense of responsibility making sure she remains standing into the future. The lighthouse is a registered municipal heritage site and is a critical piece of infrastructure. Its uniqueness attracts many visitors, family, and friends. The community center is a place to hold special events, meetings, reunions, birthdays, weddings, and celebrations of life. On average, there are 50 visitors per day during peak tourism season, 30 per day on an off season, and between 150 to 200 visitors on any given Saturday when breakfast is served. This represents about 20,000 people per year that visit the lighthouse and the community center, and then go to the supporting areas and support local shops and restaurants. Once again, I am stressing that we need $100,000 in financial assistance along with our $500,000. Or $50,000. Yes, we know this is a big ask, but please keep in mind the significance of the structure and its history and heritage to the community. It is in dire need of repairs. As the Sandy Point Recreation Group, we cannot fund this project on our own. If you can give us a commitment of $100,000, then repairs can begin this spring. We also respectfully ask that the lighthouse be included as a line item in your yearly budget going forward. This would help with maintaining the lighthouse on a yearly basis. Time is of the essence, and if we ignore the repairs required now, the cost will increase over time, and then it will become a question of feasibility, whether it makes financial sense to pursue these efforts. The last thing the community or any one of us want is to see the remains of a foundation where the lighthouse once stood and history and heritage lost. On behalf of the Sandy Point Recreation Group, I'd like to thank you for your time and your consideration in this urgent matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Zelka and Linda, for presenting this evening. My gosh, you're doing a lot of fundraising, that's for sure. Lots of events taking place there. So congratulations on that. And I have to say, looking through your calendar, the images, the pictures there were absolutely stunning. They were so beautiful. They really were.
And so, we had like hundreds of entries.
Yeah.
It was just 12.
Yeah, really beautiful. Before I open it up to all of council, I do have a couple of questions of my own as well. So the first phase is what we're talking about here this evening, correct? For $150,000, the work that needs what you would consider to be immediate, an immediate
need. That's like if you read the engineering report, that's in the poorest condition.
Right.
And that's what we want to focus on. And it needs to be done sooner rather than later, because the longer you let it go, as we know, materials go up, labor goes up, and what might cost us $150,000 this year, we could be looking at $200,000 next year.
Sure. Yeah. And I believe your timeline for all of the work that needs to be done is approximately 3 years.
Yes.
Yes. Max.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for that. And my other question before I hand it over to other counselors is have you received any financial support from the province or the feds yet?
We haven't been able to do that due to the fact that we were waiting for the contractor to come in and give us an estimate on what the cost would be. So as of now, we are applying for grants, federal, provincial assistance, everything that we qualified for, we are reaching out to.
But unfortunately, like we missed the deadline for last year to get funds for this year because we didn't have that quote. And the contractor, this contractor does have some experience working on lighthouses. So we were fortunate that he actually gave us a quote, because like I said, we had a few come out last year, but nobody would commit to a quote even.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for that. And I see Councillor Cool has his hand up, and then Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Thank you. Great presentation, great report. And I think my question was already asked, but have you went for any provincial or federal funding? And I think that would be very important. And I don't know if someone within our organization could even help with helping them to do that. I don't know if that's possible or not, but I was just wondering, and that was really my question, so.
Okay. Sherry last year helped set up a meeting with ACOA, but unfortunately ACOA was only willing to help if it's somehow, they didn't want to help with the repairs, but if we were to enhance the lighthouse, then they would consider doing something like donating money. But for like the phase 2 and 3, we do have some ideas of how, like we kind of want to improve the lighthouse and maybe make it more of a tourism attraction. And then I was thinking we could go back to ACOA with these ideas and apply for the phase 2 and 3.
But as people are aware, if you don't have a solid foundation, we have nothing to build on.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
So I was just wondering, Zalka and Linda, with the two funding, and I was scrambling through the notes from Atlas. They mention the heritage funding. You know how some of the funding applications you have to have like 50% before they'll give you? Is there any stipulations? Have you looked into the language of that? Like, is there a need? You've got a pretty substantial amount, but clearly not enough, right?
Obvious.
Yeah, obvious. But are they requiring like the heritage? There were two. Do you remember there were two that's in this report? My question is, do those funding opportunities require a base amount of funding before you're actually going to be applicable to be considered?
Honestly, Sherry, I don't know. I know some of the grants and the like the funding that I've been looking at, they do require that you put in a certain amount, then they put in a certain amount, and everybody puts a little bit in. Yeah. But like you said, our main concern right now is the $150,000 for just this year. And unfortunately, we missed the deadline for a lot of those grants from last year because we didn't have a quote. And some of those grants or the funding aspect of it, they wanted to see a quote when you were filling in the applications.
Yeah, it's a process.
It's a process.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that, Deputy Warden.
I would still reach out to Nolan. There is some money sometimes that's still available at the end. I know his office hours, he's always in his office on Friday. And Karen can give you a copy of anything that's out there that's available right now. It's worth a try, to be honest.
We have reached out to Nolan.
We'll check any information.
We'll take whatever people you can direct us to.
Yeah.
And the other thing, when I read through the report, with the concrete work, are they saying how long they feel that concrete work will hold up because of being in the water? Like, is there any kind of lifespan that they're saying against it?
We haven't asked that question yet. And it's we need the structural concrete work needs to be done.
Yes.
So we have been looking to the different contractors, and we're hoping somebody comes back with a quote for us so we can even get a better price.
Yeah, I did speak to Robbie Harlow because we were quoted, it needs to be a class 4 exposure cement where it does set in the water. And this is just a different recipe they use for cement when being placed in the water.
Thank you.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, and I think it actually may have even been included in the document that was provided, 2008 was the last year that substantial repairs were done to the lighthouse. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
But there was no cement work or anything done. It was just the outside boarding and the metal strips.
Yeah. Okay, that was going to be my next question, because I was trying to, just from what Deputy Warden said, kind of get a feel for when this work is done, how long are we thinking it's going to last, I guess, for a better way of framing it.
And it's not, the whole concrete doesn't have to be replaced. There's just, I guess, certain sections that the contractor saw that might need to be, So it probably due to the elements and whatever else sitting in that water, right?
And the contractor also stated that probably over the years with the wave action, that the rock that's there probably went up on a slant in order to be used as a breakwater. So when the waves are coming in, they're not just smashing on the building or the base itself. Okay. So that will have to be something that's looked at. But as far as I know, that will be, it's all in our quote that we have now.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Councillor Richardson. Oh, did I lose Councillor Richardson?
He's on mute.
I can't
see
him.
Sorry about that.
Oh, there you are.
I was coughing, so I was trying to be silent.
Oh, okay.
What I was wondering about phase 2 and 3, if perchance there was any idea of cost, so it would be consolidated as one large project. I understand that it's paramount that the foundation be fixed right away, but possibly that could be scaled in there, because if we're looking at a COA, I think it could be expanded into one large project, just a thought.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
That's interesting. When I was talking with the contractor that day, Dallas, I said to him about the different phases. And he said, chances are our most expensive will be the base. The middle part itself, there's some rot showing, and of course shingles will have to be replaced. You know, just not little things, but important things. The third phase, which will be the crown, the tower, that metal will have to be replaced, like a whole new structure. Now, we can go through, he said, and sandblast it off, or, you know, wire, take the rust out, patch it. But if we're going to go through this expense, let's do it properly.
Yeah, I think anything that's being done, you want to make sure that there's longevity to it, right? You don't, exactly. You certainly don't want to have to be, you know, in this position in 5 years or 10 years time. You want to make sure that whatever you're doing is going to last.
Give us at least 25 to 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Does that answer your question, Councillor Richardson?
Yes. Okay. No, it was just a thought.
Yeah, well, wondering if there's a way, yeah, with all of with those three phases, if, you know, the feds could, you know, perhaps be responsible for one of those and the province for another, and or a combination of all of us. I don't know.
And but the municipality, I think it's, for one, and we have our one third of each.
We can get a commitment. We can start the spring.
Yeah, I do understand. I think we all understand really that time is of the essence here. So.
And it's not even this time, it's actually finding somebody to do the work, because with the house being, the lighthouse being out in the water, I think that's a reason a lot of the contractors were not getting any quotes. And the contract, like this Dallas that came out when we were speaking with him, it's like I said, he has previous work experience on lighthouses. Yeah, and he's a Red Seal carpenter, and he seems to enjoy a challenge, which I think makes a big difference, right? Because he wants to, I think he really wants to do this just so he can kind of show off his skills and make it his own in one sense, right?
Good. I think I saw our CAO with his hand up earlier, but I'm not sure if he still wanted to speak or had a comment or a question, or maybe...
No, Dale asked my question. Thank you very much, Warden.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay,
do we have any other questions or comments for Zelka or and Linda? Hearing none, thank you, ladies, very, very much for presenting this evening and keeping us up to date, you know, with what you're doing and how you're doing and what your needs are. Of course, this matter will be discussed during our budgetary discussions that begin on February 26th, I believe is the day. So there'll be lots of discussion, I'm sure, at that point. On this.
Yes, because like I said, we would like to get this project off the ground ASAP. And we have a contractor that is committed to doing the work within 8 weeks.
Right.
It's taken us almost 2 years to get a contractor to commit.
Yes.
So we don't want to lose him.
Yeah, and I believe our budget, CAO, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. I believe we're looking to have our budget approved the first part of May.
Yes, that's why we're here now.
It'll be approved in April.
April? Warden. Okay. Yeah. Wonderful. Okay. Thank you again, ladies.
That puts us... Okay, thank
you. A little closer. Yes.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Have a good evening. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to 7, economic and community development. Our first item is tax exemption for community organizations policy revision, and that's Ms. Kane. I believe she's with us.
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, good evening.
Hi. Just pulling up my staff report here. I'm not used to it all being online. report, there's a couple of items here that have changed in the draft or the proposed draft policy. During the year we did have a property
that notified us they would no longer be eligible for status or exemption under this policy due to a sale of the property. So that prompted staff to look at the policy a little bit more closely and do an inclusive review. And unfortunately, we didn't have anything in the policy that required a reimbursement of the exempt taxes for that property. So that prompted a staff to do a revision of this policy. So what you're going to see is definitions that provide clearer meaning. You'll see tighter controls around the ownership of the property and the registration of the organization that owns the property. And if council does remember, we've had some challenges in the past with the properties exempt under this policy and not being a registered organization or defunct registered organization. I believe it was the Clyde River area. So requirements to stay in good standing at all times throughout the year, and to have no outstanding taxes or fees owed to the municipality. So that would come into play if someone's requesting to be added to the policy. We would want to make sure that all of their fees and reports, anything that is owed to the municipality is not outstanding. We would have stronger, this policy has stronger measures to protect the municipality for any properties that are no longer eligible. So a reimbursement, prorated reimbursement of taxes section. And the other item which prompted most of this review was the removal of the Camp Jordan trustees from Schedule A. That property has sold, has new owners, and is no longer eligible to receive the tax exemption. The other thing is with the MGA is very explicit in its wording of what the municipality or what council can do for the exempt property. And it does say it has to be the exempt property of the registered organization or charitable foundation, and that it has to be, in council's opinion, providing a service to the municipality that would otherwise be the responsibility of council. So we are going to require now with their annual submission to make sure that they're still eligible, that we would ask that the councillor sign off that they have reviewed the purpose that the minister, that the organization is illustrating. So they will be giving that on the Schedule B annual submission. And they'll give a overview of what service they provide to the municipality. So we would ask that the councillor review that and accept it or illustrate that they're in support of that organization's purpose. So those are the main changes. It is important to also note that this policy will repeal the previous policy because there are extensive changes.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We do have a prepared motion if someone would like to make that, and then we can have discussion. Deputy Warden? Oh, we just have to get you off of...
Hang on. I'll make the motion.
Thank you.
Be it resolved, the municipality of the District of Shelburne approve and adopt the revised policy 10, tax exemption for community organizations effective April 1st, 2026, as presented.
Thank you. Can I have a seconder, please?
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Discussion on the motion. Councillor Kuhl? Oh, you're still muted.
Okay, is that better?
That's better.
I think I already know the answer to this question, but I just asked it anyway. This only includes community buildings like listed there. That doesn't include places of worship or things like that, right?
Places of worship actually receive a tax exemption through the province. So when they enter our tax roll, they already have a tax code on them that exempts them provincially.
Oh, okay. That's all I wanted to ask. Yeah. Great. Okay, thank you.
Deputy Warden.
Can we just check some of the listings under each district? I think when the boundaries changed, I see Jordan Bay Community Club is still under District 3. And I think that should be moved to District 5. And I'm not sure what where 308-6659 Nova Scotia Limited is. So that might have been a little bit of mix up with the boundary changes as well.
I don't believe those columns have or rows have been adjusted since the boundary change. So good call there. We can make that revision.
Thank you for that. And just looking at the schedule, I think that there may be one in my district that needs to be removed there as well. And I was going to ask before about, you know, being able to ensure how we're being able to ensure that we catch all of them, not the ones just that have to be removed, but perhaps there's others that maybe have to be added. So, but I think you've answered that question for me. So thank you for that. Councillor Thorburn Irvine. Oh, you're on mute. Oh, you can't get off mute. Okay. Did you want to put your question if you had one in the chat? We may be able to.
She must be able to hit the icon.
No, or if that's not working, perhaps you have to go out and come back in again to the meeting. I'm not sure if that would. Yep. That might work. Are you good with us moving on, Councillor Thorburn Irvine, with the motion?
I had to leave the meeting and come back in to get myself.
Yeah, I would suggest leaving it, come back in to join the meeting. So just leave the meeting and come back in, and hopefully you'll be able to we'll be able to hear you when you want to speak. We'll just wait a moment if she's just a moment or two in case she had something else that she wanted to add to the conversation.
Thank you.
Oh, there you are.
I just have a quick question on behalf of an organization in District 3. It would have been through no fault of their own, but through transition of volunteers, their organization, I believe they're in good standing now as far as their not-for-profit charitable status. And so with these new regulations, I believe Val alluded to it, when people apply for grants to organizations, that'll be clear. And so retrospectively, like this past year, these people would not have known that they had to notify the municipality of being out of good standing. So will there be language that so these volunteers know? And do they have to, I do believe this organization is in good standing now. Do they need to inform for the months that they perhaps weren't?
So this policy would require annual submission of Schedule B. I do believe Robin has been in touch with, or our community development coordinator has been in touch with all of these community groups within the last month. They all are in good standings, except for, I'm going to reverse that. They're all in good standings except for three of them have some small intricacies to their situations that we're trying to work through, and you will likely see this policy come back to you in the next month if we can't get those figured out for them.
Okay.
One has indicated that they're not likely going to be interested in registering as a nonprofit, so anyway, we'll address that if it comes up, and you'll see that we just want to make sure that we're getting our Schedule A properly structured before the new tax bills are run, so that they're all getting the appropriate exemptions as they're eligible. So I do believe they're all, with the exception of three, counselor, are all in good standings.
Okay. And so just a secondary question, I guess, to that, but maybe it doesn't fit in the motion. So, Warden, if you could give me some guidance here. If organizations are in good standing, as it relates to discretionary counselor funds, I know that this is a separate matter, but is it related? And can somebody answer my question at some point on that?
It's not related to this policy, but I'll let anybody else answer that.
Okay. Thank you. That's it for questions.
So with the district grant fund, what is your specific question, counselor? Sorry, whether or not they're in good standing?
So we do want them to be in good standing, correct? For the, for organizations that we do help out, their status, they do have to be a not-for-profit.
Right.
So we will want to know that the same premise applies, that they're...
Yeah.
Maybe it's just not even a question or concern.
If it's a nonprofit organization, I guess we're assuming that they are in good standing, but you can always, before you decide to use your district grant funds, you can always go to Registry of Joint Stocks and see whether or not they are. If you were concerned about whether or not they were, if it were me, that's where I would go to check that. But I don't know if anyone else has any comment on that. No? Oh, Councillor Richardson, did you have a comment on that as well?
There are groups. I know one in particular that is certainly not for profit. But to be recognized by the terms of a not-for-profit and be able to issue receipts you have to be recognized by CRA, and it is a fairly convoluted procedure to have that done.
Are you talking about the charitable status, Councillor Richardson?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very, I was going to use the word strenuous.
convoluted.
It's something that takes a lot of time for a group to actually be recognized and to get that approval. So, but to Councillor Thorben Irvine's question, I'm not sure. Again, like if you have question about or are concerned about providing a district grant to that organization, you can ask. I would ask the nonprofit group as well.
Sure.
But if you're questioning it, perhaps Registry of Joint Stocks may be able to provide a bit of information there for you as well.
Thank you.
Val, did you have something that you wanted to add as well? I thought I saw you go your mic off there for a moment.
Yes, I just wanted to comment on that the MGA, particular to the tax exemption policy, the MGA is specific that they are two different things. So you can be a named Canadian charitable organization or a nonprofit register. So, and how we would consider you to be a nonprofit that's providing a service to the community would be through your Registry of Joint Stocks. So it's not a CRA named charitable organization. So they are two different, and you can, through this policy, you can do either or of those.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for that. Any other questions or comments? If not, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, next item is Shelburne Visitor Information Center Support, and that's Ms. Kane again.
Thank you, Warden. So the municipality received a letter from the Shelburne and Area Chamber of Commerce requesting. The councillor has her hand up.
Oh, Councillor Shand, did you have a question or a comment on that as well?
Sorry, I just need to declare a conflict of interest for this topic.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Okay, Pam.
Mm-hmm. So the municipality received a letter of funding support from the Shelburne and Area Chamber of Commerce for the operation 2026 season operation of the Visitor Information Shelburne, or the Shelburne, I am so sorry, the Town of Shelburne okay. Visitor Information Center. So there is a motion prepared here, but I'll go on a little bit to give some background on this. So this topic was raised prior to receiving the letter, was raised at our Economic Growth Committee for some discussion. And the committee, just through discussion, did acknowledge the value that they see in the Visitor Information Center. So I just wanted to make council aware of that discussion. But further to that, I've also talked to the Shelburne Area Chamber of Commerce since receiving the letter, and I've also talked to the Town of Shelburne since receiving the letter. So the Town of Shelburne and the Chamber of Commerce both alluded to not confirming the operational methods or manner in which they have decided they'll decide to operate that VIC. And given that it is a town-owned facility, I feel it's important, or staff are suggesting, that council give the town and the Shelburne Area Chamber of Commerce a chance to finalize how they would like to see the facility operational, and then encourage the Town of Shelburne to then come forth to the municipality with a funding request. Historically, we have funded both the Town of Lockport and the Town of Shelburne VICs in their operations. We've done this through our Grants to Organizations program, which every year council does approve an amount to be able to administer their grants organizations program through policy. So we do have an amount in the draft 2026-2027 budget. So once that amount's finalized, staff recommend that we continue to review that request and make recommendations for approval out of that grants to organizations pot. So it is important to note that the municipality also funds the Town of Lockport with a similar operational operational budget to what's been alluded to in the town in the chamber's letter for the Town of Shelburne VIC, and the historical figure approved for that operation is $3,500 to the Town of Lockport. So I would just like to make council aware that both of those requests are usually looked at in balance for the operation of those two facilities. Okay. That's everything for me.
Thank you for that. We do have a prepared motion if someone would like to make that, and then we can have discussion. Would someone like to make that motion?
I can make it.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Warden.
It is recommended that the municipality of the District of Shelburne send a response letter to the Shelburne and Area Chamber of Commerce, encouraging their continued work with the Town of Shelburne to support the successful 2026 operation of the Shelburne VIC, and that the municipality of the District of Shelburne encourages the Town of Shelburne to apply for VIC operational support to the municipality's Grants to Organizations program.
Thank you. Is there a seconder?
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Discussion on the motion? I will say that I absolutely support tourism in the area. I think it's so extremely important. for all of our communities. And you know, I do believe that the VIC is an important component of that. So I do hope that the town of Shelburne and the chamber can, you know, work together and try to figure out how to move forward. And, you know, if and when we get a request, then we can certainly consider it then. I have Councillor Richardson.
I couldn't see whether I had my hand raised or not. I 100% agree. I think it's fundamental to have those two contact points. They've been very successful and recognized. It's unfortunate that the one in Shelburne hasn't been able to operate, I don't think, in the last season, but I look forward to some way that we can find it operational this year.
Thank you. Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
I would just like to reiterate the sentiments of Andrew Locke as it was presented at the Economic Growth Committee, that the value of people like Hazel was so integral to the success of the Visitor Information Center. And it's absolutely nothing to do with, you know, young teens. Because if a young teen was, you know, the right fit and trained, then they could also implement that role. But I think it's really important in terms of the hiring of those people, because they are the front ambassador for the tourism area. And so I did go in myself, and, you know, to have an awkward teen not really offer too much up, like, the person that's sitting in that role is so critically important. And Andrew mentioned it, and I do agree with it. So, you know, I guess this is all will be on the part of the town, but so important in terms of whomever is going to be that ambassador to fulfill the role, you know? Yeah.
Yes, for sure. Thank you for that. And, you know, it was discussed, I believe, at that committee meeting as well about, you know, we're all ambassadors, right. But you know, what's happening now is because the center hasn't been open, that responsibility, I guess, has gone to the local businesses in the area. And, you know, we all want to, you know, be as supportive as we can with giving out information and making sure, you know, that we make our tourists feel welcome and all of that. But, you know, it's a lot on local businesses to have to take on that responsibility as well. And the Shelburne County Museum, I'm sure, you know, many questions come right to them as well as they walk along that beautiful waterfront. I absolutely feel that it's been missed. And I really do hope that, you know, things can be worked out for the next fiscal. Yeah. I think I have, Ms. Kane, did you want to speak? And I'm not sure if the deputy warden had wanted to. I think I saw your hand up, but I don't see it now. So,
yeah, I just wanted to add a little bit, if I might. Mm-hmm. So the reason the VIC did not operate last year was more of a timing issue than a support issue. The town had offered a different operational method to a local organization to run vendors out of there, have it more of a market setting where you could buy wares and still offer those VIC activities. Unfortunately, due to timing of the indicated interest of the other organization, unfortunately, it wasn't able to happen that way, and timelines didn't allow for the historical operation. So it wasn't due to nobody supporting it. Everyone wanted to see it open. It just unfortunately didn't happen that way. I'd also like to note that the Grants to Organizations program does allow for up to 50% operational funding. Mm-hmm. Normally, those fundings are capped at $5,000, but we would look at the applications for both of the VICs through a balanced lens and make recommendations based on that pot of money and the availability of funding. So I didn't want council to think that we wouldn't consider the, as we review applications when they come in, we could still consider their ask.
Okay, thank you for that. Deputy Warden, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, just the comment I want to make is that we remember to keep it balanced between what we give to Lockport and what we give to Shelburne. So, yeah, that was my comment.
Okay, thank you for that. And it's always good to hear what was spoken about the support always being there. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, finding the way to make it happen. So, any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. All right, last but not least, the Housing Design Catalog Housing Accelerator Fund Initiative. Ms. Kane is going to finish it off for us.
Yep, thank you, Warden. So this staff report is giving details of one of our Housing Accelerator commitments for a housing support initiative under that fund, grant funding. So through some talk with CMHC, we have decided to, I guess, pivot the initiative a little bit, whereas the municipality would no longer be doing design and review of pre-reviewed housing designs, that we would adopt the CMHC's federal design catalog. And that we would promote the designs in that and work with CMHC to become a local partner for that. So in addition to that, staff has identified some other things that we can do to further support the promotion of these designs. And in discussions with the operations department, we are recommending that council further consider waiving building and development fees for as of right projects, meaning projects that fit development requirements under our land use bylaws with no extra site plan or development agreement. So as of right developments, that we would waive the building and development fees for that. I did, based on the square footage for each of these projects, that would mean about $150 lost revenue for building permit per project and a $50 for their development permit. So roughly $200 per project should a developer be moving forward with using any of the seven designs in the federal design catalog that are for the Atlantic provinces. So I have attached the summary of the designs here. Of course, they come with technical designs as well, which are free for developers to use. So they get the entire technical design package, which will save them a substantial amount of money as well on design fees. So yeah, that is in a nutshell the fulfillment of the initiative plus some additional additives there for incentives for builders to use these designs.
Okay, thank you so much for that. What is the I couldn't quite tell what's the average size of those excuse me, those designs?
Ah, that's a good question. Our development officer did up the square footages for me. So just let me, if you give me one moment, Warden, I can find that information out for you.
Just out of curiosity there. Yeah. But very, I think, very exciting times when we talk about the potential housing developments for our residents. Let me see here. Who do I have? Councillor Richardson.
My main question is,
we do have a motion. Do you want to make that motion or someone want to make that motion and then we can
I don't have a discussion? It in front of me or I would
either do I no
oh oh you okay
I can make it
okay you have it in front of you yeah. Deputy Warden, okay, please do.
It is recommended that the municipality of the District of Shelburne approve staff to work with Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, CMHC, to fulfill the requirements of becoming local partner for housing design catalog, and that the municipality of the District of Shelburne approve the waiving of all development and building permit fees associated with as-of-right development projects using any of the 7 technical designs provided in the Atlantic region of the Federal Housing Design Catalog.
Thank you for that. Is there a seconder, please?
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Now, Councillor Richardson, I think you had a question or a comment.
My question was the quantity. I didn't pick up and go through it far enough to see, is there a minimum that has to be a unit built for that exemption?
Nope. To become a local design partner, you just have to promote the designs and allow for some as-of-right developments, or that's a recommendation. So we will have a dedicated web page or a page within our website that will promote these designs. The building department will have them. We may likely do a little pamphlet or use, because CMHC is just building out this local partnership now. So we'll be using whatever illustrations and tools that they're giving us to further promote these designs. They all are very attractive designs. And Warden, I can just give you that information if you have a moment to back up. So the designs range from anywhere from 614 square feet for accessory dwellings. I guess we have 721 square feet for stacked townhouse, one at 937 square feet, and then the fourplexes and sixplexes range between 1600 square feet and 2200 square feet.
Okay, great.
So,
thank you for that. Councilor Richardson?
The understanding I got from your reply was that an individual homeowner takes one out of the catalog and then they would, those fees would be exempted.
Yep. So they would still apply for permits as usual. Yes. We would just exempt we would waive the fees associated with those permits. So the same inspections apply. They do get the free technical designs.
Thank you.
Yep.
That's great. Thank you for that. Councillor Thorburn Irvine and then Councillor Shand.
Thank you. So, Val, so there obviously is economy of scale, and I'm not sure, I suppose somebody has to head it, so that's why it's CMHC. And I just do have a question. The designs look wonderful. We know that the infrastructure that will be put in place, that as it relates to sewer and water, for example, that's on the municipal, is that on the municipal unit? And that is where our half funding would lay the groundwork. Is that correct?
No, it's not tied to any infrastructure commitments at all. So as of right, developments are throughout all of the RD zone, the residential zone and the suburban commercial zone. So not necessarily. There are on-site sewer and well systems that would support these developments outside of infrastructure being available. Now, if the infrastructure is available, our sewer bylaw does say that you are required to hook into it. So I guess it would all depend on where the development is happening, but this is not connected to any type of infrastructure commitments.
Okay.
At all.
Because yeah. when the municipal unit can be involved, again, understanding that laying sewer and water lines are expensive, so density of housing would come into that interplay. Could we as a council do some planning to ensure that we have got green space, to ensure that there's, you know, just to use that word, green space, parks or you know, areas. I think everybody understands what green space is. I think it's so important. And I'd sure love to see that we do whatever we can to implement that.
So our planning documents and what you'll see at an upcoming council meeting, our subdivision bylaw address those types of things.
Okay.
The municipality only has the powers of our own policies and bylaws. So we'll implement what's available to us in those bylaws.
Correct. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Shand.
I guess my question is a little bit more, others may already know the answer, just looking for a little bit of background being day one. Is the intent of this to have a developer come and build these properties on land that the municipality has already purchased and would like to make into residential, or that it can be on if a developer has their own land that they want to build this type of structure on?
So although we think all of our initiatives lead to complementing each other, they are standalone initiatives. So promoting these housing designs is not directly linked to any other of our initiatives, like our surplus lands or our housing grant policy or any infrastructure work that we're exploring or potentially would do in the future. There's absolutely no linkage between the two. The initiatives are standalone, although they do work together to promote the municipality's housing goals, particularly affordable housing goals. But no, it's not linked to any other. It's not linked to our surplus lands policy at all.
Okay, was that helpful?
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Any other questions or comments on this item? If not, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. All right. Thank you very much for that. Oh, sorry. Did I miss someone?
No, I just said thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your evening. All right. We're going into Recreation and Parks, and it's the Equity and Anti-Racism Advisory Committee Terms of Reference, and that's Mr. Dedrick. Welcome.
Good evening.
We can.
So the equity and anti-racism plan, as you are aware, has been developed. And so the first step in that is to establish an advisory committee. And that committee, so with the staff report, it provides the terms of reference for that committee. So this has been in work with the town of Shelburne and the town of Lockport, the two other units. And essentially, the main role of that committee as an advisory committee is basically advising the three councils on the implementation of the equity and anti-racism plan and kind of providing oversight and accountability and things of that nature. So the terms of reference themselves, take a look at them, essentially it's broken down in the purpose, the role, membership, rules of engagement, staff resources, and policy review. So when you look at actual membership, we're looking at having the way we kind of are proposing it is that so those community members, we want to have the greatest possible representation, so from a diverse array of voices and equity deserving groups. And that kind of can be broken down into two things. We want to have representations from each unit, of course, but the priority kind of as well would be having representation of community members with that lived in experience that have maybe experienced discrimination based on a numerous factors. So we definitely want to have representation from each unit, but more so we want to have that representation from the various equity deserving groups, because those are the groups and those individuals would be who we want to make sure is advising us on the plan and how we're implementing it and whatnot. So if you look at it, it's 9 voting members. That's 3 council members, one from each unit, and then 6 from community members. And that number 6, you can kind of from all the various groups that people may identify with. Not that you can categorize many of them, and there's definitely at least six various groups that could be represented as a minimum, if you will. We don't have that there's a maximum or whatnot for the group. It's really about making sure we have that representation. So it does say there any like additional community members could be added or be appointed. In the process that has been proposed identify or appoint community representatives is an expression of interest. So we have developed a form that can be filled out. It's pretty straightforward. And it asks some questions around identifying which groups you identify with, age group, and then where you're from. So which municipal unit you would be from. But the main question is around giving them a chance to explain why they want to be a member of the committee and how they think they could contribute. So that's kind of left open, and they can say as much as they want and draw from as many different things they would like to feel that needs to be included in that answer for that question. And that'll give us a good idea, you know, when it comes to reviewing those expressions of interest. And the way that would take place is, as it says here in the terms of reference, there would be a nominating committee, which would consist of mayors and wardens from the three units. And that way, the recommendations, because we're trying to have representation from many groups, not just the units, it would be a collective decision before it goes to, or recommendation before it goes to the three units. So mayors, wardens would be fully aware. It would be based on kind of their recommendations with kind of made probably some staff input, things like that. And then that's how those community members would be appointed to the committee. And we've proposed that committee members would serve 2-year terms as well as counselors. That way it's the commitment isn't, you know, a burden of 3 years or more or things like that. So we want to keep it so it would be, I think, a little more people would like that more, we thought. So and then the rest of the terms just usually pretty general around if you vacated the position, things of that, how you could be reappointed. And then when it comes to meetings, we were looking at the least would be quarterly. Now we do fully expect that members will want to see that initial, probably that first year more than that. So probably bi-monthly, monthly may be hard to do just to see progress, but we'll probably propose a bi-monthly meeting schedule after that first meeting. And that's probably more realistic for the staff that are involved and just for making progress on the plan for that initial. But eventually, just like the Accessibility Advisory Committee, it'd be nice to eventually come to a quarterly kind of meeting schedule. And then this is the same every 4 years. It would be to be reviewed and be updated. But of course, it could be updated anytime depending on, you know, feedback from members of the committee eventually. Because it'll be our first time kind of using this process. And when it comes to the expression of interest form, we'll have a paper copy. It'll be also available online, so people could go right online and submit. So that'll be, you know, a little easier for people to do it. And I think that's about it, actually. Hope I'm missing anything there or not. But there will be staff, myself, for us, but just like the Accessibility Advisory Committee, staff would be there as resources for the committee, just like we operate now with the accessibility one. So what's happening is this is going to each council this month. And the timeline would be that if we had it approved this month, we could advertise kind of end of this month, mid-March, and then have it come to the nominating committee, which we would establish. And then by early April, all the appointments would be complete, and the first meeting of the committee could potentially happen end of April. So that's the tentative timeline.
Excellent.
That's it.
Thank you very much for that. There is a prepared motion if someone would like to make that.
I would make that. Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of District of Municipality of the District of Shelburne. It doesn't say it in my thing here. That's why I got confused there. Approve the Eastern Shelburne County Equity and Anti-Racism Advisory Committee Terms of Reference.
Thank you for that. Is there a seconder, please?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. We'll have discussion. Just very quickly, I think it's really vital that we have those who have the lived experiences. I mean, they can help pilot us in the right direction and ensure that we make this as inclusive as we can for everyone. So I'm quite happy with the terms of reference and what the plan is for it moving forward. Councillor Thorburn Irvine?
I think it's just an excellent initiative, and it's really speaking to the people that were at the table as the plan was put forward. So it is an excellent initiative.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you for that. Next, we'll move on to 9, Operations and Protective Services, the monthly building report for January 2026. That's for information purposes, and it's nice to see another new dwelling. We have to count those up at the end of the fiscal to see how many new homes have been built in our municipality this year. Any questions or comments on that item? Hearing none, we'll move on to administration, and that's the from our CAO, Amalgamation Steering Committee Cost Allocation Recommendation, a verbal update. CAO, welcome.
Thank you very much, Warden. There is a motion prepared, but I just wanted to give some background as to the reasoning for that motion. The motion actually comes up from the Amalgamation Committee up to this council and also the two other councils, the Town of Lockport and the Town of Shelburne, with regard to getting permission to apply for Municipal Innovation Program funding with the government. I just want to step back a little bit in the presentations that have been received by the Amalgamation Committee. The anticipated costs of an amalgamation are significant. We started off, first of all, by looking at a presentation that was given to us by the Nova Scotia Regulatory and Appeals Board, in which they identified the types of reports that they would require in order to make an evaluation. Myself and the other two CAOs, we did some high-level cost estimates for those reports. We came up with a number of about $550,000, and we're not sure that that is an accurate number, in the sense that when we look at the Windsor West Hants consolidation, their total costs were over $1 million. And we don't know what the breakdown of those costs are, so that's one of the questions we'll be asking them at an upcoming meeting that we're going to have. But my guess is that there's probably a very, very significant expense there with regard to legal costs. So with this in mind, that we've got an early estimate of $550,000. Last November or December, I can't remember the exact date, our council did have a meeting with Minister John M. MacDonald, who's the Minister of Municipal Affairs, in which we asked him the question directly, you know, are you willing to fund amalgamation going forward? Their response was, you've got to go and look at the MIP program, the Municipal Innovation Program, for funding. So we said, okay, fine. We did go and we did have a look at that MIP program. The total available funds in that program, I think, is $578,000. And that is shared out amongst all municipalities that apply for those funds. And every year it is oversubscribed. So the odds of you applying for $550,000 and getting that $550,000 from that fund are very, very low. You'll probably get some funding, but it'll probably be pretty low. The challenge is the timing of it, not only just in the amount that you're going to get, but the timing of it. We would need to put in an application no later than the end of March. And so that's why this motion is coming before the three councils, essentially asking for permission to apply for that funding. But there is a clause within the motion that says that the amalgamation committee is not to spend any of that money should it be awarded, unless it got direction from the three councils at a later date. So the idea is try and get whatever funding we can from the province and put it in your back pocket while you're going through your education phase and coming to a decision as to whether or not you want to or may not want to proceed with moving towards an application to the NSRAB. We did, or the chairperson of the amalgamation committee did also send a letter to our local MLA explaining the challenges with regard to funding and the likelihood that we'll be well short in what the ultimate costs would be, and that we are asking for his comment in terms of whether or not he can assist us with the provincial government. So that's the background that that I've got for you. If anyone has any questions, I'm open to questions right now.
Great. Thank you very much for that. And I was just going to make the note about, or I guess to remind everyone at the amalgamation committee meeting that we had, that we did make a motion to request our MLA to, just to state that, you know, where we are in this process and the need for 100% funding in order for us to move forward. Okay, we do have a motion prepared. If someone could make that, please, and then we can discuss.
I'll make the motion.
Thank you.
Be it resolved that the municipality of the District of Shelburne, Town of Shelburne, and Town of Lockport split any amalgamation costs the municipality of the District of Shelburne pay 76.24%, the Town of Shelburne pay 17.43%, and the Town of Lockport pay 6.33% of such costs. And further, municipality of the District of Shelburne, Town of Shelburne, and Town of Lockport jointly submit an application for Municipal Innovation Program funding for a total amount of $550,000, such that the MIP program cover $412,500, which is 75%, and that the three units fund $137,500, 25%, with the municipality of the District of Shelburne covering $104,830. Let me repeat that, $104,830, the Town of Shelburne covering $23,966, and the Town of Lockport covering $8,704. And furthermore, the Amalgamation Committee agree that should the MIP funding application be successful, the committee will not spend any funds until authorization is received from all three units, all three councils. Yes.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Is there a seconder, please?
I would second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? Excuse me. Councillor Cool?
Yes, thank you. Couple questions I have. One first is the percentage breakdown. How did that come by residents?
That calculation is done by the percentage of the assessments of each of the units. So we used the last year's assessment numbers, and then we calculated the percentages accordingly.
Okay, the reason I asked that question, because I can remember back when first went on council and became a member of the arena committee, we at that time had the cost was 50-50, and within a year we ended up, and it was said by, we had actually a couple of people who came into council with presentations said, and I think I asked the question one night, why did you come to our council with it. And they said they have, you guys have the most money. And I'm wondering where we're going into this thing. That's why I was wondering from there, because it looks like we're paying pretty well for the whole thing, other than a little bit.
I think, and CAO, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that this is typically the formula that we use, is it not? Assessed values for a municipality?
Yeah, assessed values is definitely something we use.
It's foundational, I think, to any funding formula that we use. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Councillor Richardson.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's more of a statement than a question. I certainly have no problems exploring amalgamation. My, I guess, reservations come on the end cost. At what stage we arrive there, and again, my understanding was before, in some of the other amalgamations, and I won't go back as far as Queens, because I think that was a unique one, so to speak. But other ones, the provincial government was forthcoming in supplying a lot of the manpower and the legal expertise in doing that. And I'm not sensing that willingness to come forward. And I realize we've reached out to our MLA, but I think we need to make that paramount, that they need to be very helpful in this procedure, if I can say that. Anyhow.
I echo that thought completely, Councillor Richardson. I think we all know of the millions of dollars that were given to other municipalities who went down this road. And certainly if we want to give this all of the attention and go through the research and everything that we need to in order to make a solid decision on this, we need this work to be done. And we don't have all of the money that's going to be required to get us to that point. As our CAO has said before, you know, we're talking about $500,000, but the cost is probably a lot greater than that in order to get these studies, all of these reports and everything that's required to make the decision that we have to make with our residents.
And if I may supplement that before I leave it, I agree completely. The $500,000, I think, is the initial reports, but I think there will be substantial, and in my guesstimate would be $1 million on top of it. But I wish we had some more enthusiasm. Again, I'll go back to the province and our provincial MLA to encourage this, because I think it's beneficial to all parties and even the province.
Thank you for that. I'm going to have CAO for comment, and then we'll go to Councillor Sutherland.
Thank you, Warden. I agree with you, Councillor Richardson, that the $550,000 is, you know, roughly going to be your cost of your initial reports. I suspect that in the case of Windsor West Hants, a huge part of their costs were actually in the transition period when they appointed their coordinator, who was very expensive. And when you look at the number of meetings that they held, it was quite a significant process, and it lasted quite a long time, I think a year and a half or something like that. So I think there's a huge chunk of costs that we can't estimate right now, that, you know, could be double what the initial reports could, you know, could be. So I agree with you on that.
Yep. Provincial support is paramount. Councillor Sutherland, I'm not seeing your hand up now, but I may be missing it.
Dale pretty well questioned what I had questioned, so okay. I got my answer through that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Deputy Warden?
And this isn't something that's going to happen overnight. And we don't want to rush it. We want to get it right. So we need to make sure that all three units are on board and that everybody's in agreement, and we need to make sure we got all our ducks in a row. Mm.
Okay, thank you for that. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you, CAO. Next, we'll move on to correspondence, and they're both for information purposes. The first is the Minister of Justice and Attorney General of Canada re-concerns with the criminal justice system. I would say that it took a bit of time to get a response, but the response, I think, was very thorough, and I think it spoke to the points that we had raised in our letter. You know, it's something that I think we've been advocating for a number of years now, and it's good to see that we've got a response from the minister to say that, you know, they understand the concerns that we have and with the criminal justice system, and that they're working toward some resolutions, I would say. Any questions or comments on that piece of correspondence? If not, we'll move on to the next, which was an open letter of solidarity with Iranian Canadian healthcare professionals. And this, again, was for information purposes only. It was a letter that council received, a correspondence that we received from one of our local doctors. And again, it's in your package for information purposes. Any questions or comments on that? Hearing none, we'll move on to committee reports and warden update. Are there any committee reports for this evening? Councillor Thorburn Irvine?
I don't know that it was committee so much, but well, I suppose anyway, the 2nd of February, the Black History Month, I attended that event at the Black Loyalist Center, Heritage Center. And then on the 3rd, we had our municipal modernization workshop. And then on the 4th, as a member of the public, I attended the amalgamation meeting at the municipal office.
Thank you for that. Those are actually all three that I have marked on my list as well. So thank you. Deputy Warden.
Monday night, I attended the arena meeting just to go over our finances, get things in order for a grant that we're applying for. We do have a new digital sign that we'll see in the next month being installed on the outside of the building.
Excellent.
Yeah, some of that funding came from our local sponsorship, which we'll see their names on that board. This afternoon at 4:30, we had an events committee meeting getting ready for discussing things for Dock Street Days coming up, which it's only a few months away. We're almost into March, so we're making sure that we have everything in order, and we will see our numbers come before budget time for the events that's coming up for the coming year. So that's for me.
Great. Thank you for that. Any other for committee reports? Again, Councillor Thorburn Irvine really said, I guess, what I was going to talk about. On February 2nd, there were a number of staff and a couple of councillors who did attend the African Nova Scotian event at the Black Loyalist Heritage Centre. And I had the honor of reading a part of the proclamation along with my colleagues. And I will say that, you know, that event is always a lovely event, and especially when the children are there. And they just make it even more special, I think. And then, of course, on the 3rd, most of council from the towns of Shelburne and Lockport and the municipality participated in the amalgamation workshop that was facilitated by Kevin Latimer. I think I had stated it before about the amalgamation committee meeting or at the amalgamation committee meeting that was held on the 4th, that I found the workshop to be extremely helpful. And I think it gave all of us an opportunity to discuss together and share what we thought were the benefits and the challenges with amalgamation. You know, there were certainly some things that I hadn't thought of. And so it's always great to get others' perspectives And I was happy to be able to participate in that. And I do encourage our residents to send in their questions and comments to the email address. And I don't know it off the top of my head. I'm not sure if the CAO does, but to ensure that, you know, those questions and the answers, the responses that are there, that they're shared with everyone. So everyone is getting the same information. And we'll continue to learn together throughout this whole process. I would say as well, this Sunday, I believe it is, Sunday the 15th, is the National Flag Day in Canada. And on February 15th, 1965, Canada's maple leaf flag was raised for the very first time. And our flag represents the country's shared values of freedom, peace, tolerance, and justice, serving as a unifying symbol for all Canadians. And I know with all of the chaos and going on in the world, it's good to be reminded of that and that it belongs to all of us. And lastly, I'll just end with noting that our flags will be flown at half mast as we, along with the rest of Canada, mourn the incredible loss that has just taken place in BC, and our deepest condolences to all. With that, if we can have a motion, please, to go in camera at 7:31. Oh, Councillor Richardson, did you have a comment?
Yes, I'd like to mention that this past Sunday that our lobster chow down, that several have participated, and just to mention that it had been, I think, one of the most successful that we've had to date.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad that it was a success.
Delicious.
Okay, it is 7:31. If I could have a motion, please, to go in camera.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you. Seconder?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. It's now 9:19 p.m. and we are back in public session of council. There is a motion regarding the CAO employment contract. If someone would like to make that, please.
Where is it?
I'll make it.
Thank you.
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne approve and authorize the warden to sign the updated CAO employment contract as discussed in camera.
Thank you. Is there a seconder, please?
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hey, Siri, turn off your music. Sorry. My Siri came on playing me music. Sorry. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. It is now 9:20 p.m. and we shall adjourn our meeting. Thank you, everyone.